Welcome back to the Wide World of Wargaming Age of Sigmar podcast. Here again are your hosts, Alex, John, and Garrett. Both Jeremy and Matthew are out today. John, what's on your workbench?
Hey, Alex, how you doing this week, man? It was a good week for me. I had a nice weekend here. We're recording on a Monday, as it were. And last week, a good friend of mine, Hai Dong, came back from a little visit to Vietnam. You know, he went to go visit his great grandma, took his ma there, and he brought me back this bottle of, I guess you would call it coconut wine, though wine is an interesting term with this particular beverage. Comes in a big green box with red stars on it, coming out of the communist country, and it says, "Please forgive my Vietnamese for everybody who does or does not speak Vietnamese," but it is Ben Troy Koi Toy, and that translates to 39% rice, or excuse me, coconut wine. And let me give the first sip here, see how it tastes. Oh, that is good. Like a young coconut, you know, you get the yolk coconut where they cut the top off and you have the fresh coconut water in there. Imagine someone did that and then just dumped like four shots of vodka into it.
Oh, geez.
And that is exactly what that tastes like. And so with that on my lips, I got in, you know, I didn't get very much AOS in this week. My good buddy Sean came by on Thursday and I played a game of 40K with my Raven Wing against his Thousand Sons. We tried to play a Vigilus mission where the in my case, the Raven Wing were guarding a convoy, and we called it top of turn two because I had exactly one model left. So that was a pretty brutal game. But we were also testing out a little live streaming. So I set up a live streaming rig in my garage with three cameras, some 4K cameras, nice lighting and stuff. And hopefully I'll get some folks over and we'll start streaming some AOS games as too. So that should be pretty good. And then rolling into the weekend, believe it or not, I was invited over to the Goodbye at Dawn party hosted at Carl Tuttle's Astronomicon. Of course, Adon and Carl of the Independent Characters, and of course, Adon of the Lords and Heroes AOS podcast, which I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with. And it looks like we're going to have Adon on maybe next week or so on this podcast as well. So we're looking forward to actually getting him on here. And it was real nice over there at that. Yeah. So we were just talking about that, right? And so there at the Goodbye Adon party, I played a little kill team, played against my buddy Lars Eldari, and he brewed up a nice Kolsch. So he and I mostly drank his Kolsch. There were some dice rolled as well. So all things considered, I would say it was a great week. Took the wife over to Capitola, your old stomping grounds, Garrett. I will tell you, it is as beautiful as you remember it. It was a wonderful day on the coast yesterday. Did some tide pool exploring, all that good stuff. So, Garrett, how was your week, my friend?
Well, I had a pretty AOS filled week.
I put him to sleep with all my talk. Sorry about that here.
I'm in the beginnings of a tournament binge, actually. I have three back-to-back weekends of tournaments, the last one being a GT, then one weekend break, and then I'm going to another GT after that. So I've been practicing a lot with my corn to fine-tune the list, and I've settled on a particular list, and I've gotten in two games on a stream last week, and then I went to a tournament on Saturday, and I'm desperately trying to finish painting up two more Bloodthirsters, my Judgments, and the rest of my three Blood Reavers to finish off a command for my second 10-man unit. So that's what I have going on, and tonight I am enjoying a nice Clementine Sparkling Izzy.
Oh, that's becoming traditional for you.
Yeah, well, every now and then the store will sell the 12 packs of the bottles, and like you have to buy them because like right away, and we buy two of them at once because then they're just like gone for months at a time. And yeah, like, and then we're back to buying like the four packs or just none at all. So I now have my influx of Izzy's that I can start drinking again. But yeah, just went to a tournament this last weekend. It was just a small 9-man event. Not a lot of people came out. It was the end of a slow grow league out in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I lost my second game. It came down literally to a 9-inch charge that my opponent mm-hmm. made, and he got a minor victory off of that. I killed 1,700 points. He killed 1,800 points. It was a nice corn-on-corn action there. Brutal, bloody game. And after that second game, because it was an odd number of players, I decided to drop and drive home early since it was a 2-hour drive home. And I would rather let the last place player play a game from as a local rather than him get a bye for the last round and me go home later. I was like, you know, I'll just go home early. So, but it was fun, great event, and looking forward to my next weekend event at Fredericksburg. And then I got Crimson Fields, which is up in Huzzah Hobbies, 32-man, 5-round two-day event. And then Triumph GT in Jersey after that. So, Alex, what do you got going on these days?
Well, it sounds like you got your hands full with a bunch of events. I look forward to seeing you do well. And remember, give no mercy, take no quarter. I don't have anything on my workbench. I am just waiting out the tide for the General's Handbook, especially since we know it's going to be coming out in June instead of, you know, late July, early August, or even mid-August. So now that we know that General's Handbook is essentially coming 2 months earlier than what I had anticipated, I don't even think I want to focus on anything hobby-based right now, because who knows? You know, I know for a fact that some of the things that I have right now are not exactly going to be the way that they are, and an entire battle tome that I play may not even be relevant, you know, depending on some of the information that's come about here and there.
Legion of Grief.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed there, Alex. I'm surprised that you're not, maybe eyeing up some sea elves or some wicked witches or maybe some little gobbos you could run around. I mean, doesn't all that death kind of just bring you down sometimes? You're looking for something a little lively to dance across the board, maybe some Sylvaneth or something catching your eye? No, nothing like that?
Well, I will tell you this much. When it comes to like an order army, if there was going to be a like Tyrion faction, you know, dragon knight heavy style, like militaristic elf faction, I would be very tempted.
There is one. Sure. It's called Order Draconis.
With a battle tome, sir.
There's a need to be competitive. We all understand that.
Not going to try to be
order. It is Dragon Knight heavy. It literally is only Dragon Knights and a dragon.
Yo. I play Necrons in 40K. I'm not trying to get my heart broken in two game systems. So, but in the meantime, because I don't really have anything on my workbench, so to speak, and I'm really trying to not necessarily have too much alcohol lately. I'm just drinking a peach pear sparkling water because I'm a millennial.
I will tell you, so far this coconut wine is strong enough for the three of us. So.
Hopefully this
episode doesn't run too long. We'll see how far I make it.
you're sleeping by the end of it.
That's right.
Perfect. Well, we actually have quite a bit in store today. You know, we are going to be reviewing a little bit. There weren't any significant majors or GTs over the last weekend. However, we do want to touch base with the GW preview weekend that we just had, as well as some things that we've alluded to that were announced just today on Monday, which we're recording on Monday, by the way. We're also going to take just a little bit more of a guess and some speculation as to the General's Handbook, since it did come as a surprise to some of us that it would be coming in, you know, again in June rather than, say, mid-late summer. And then after that, just like Garrett has on his workbench with his Bloodthirsters, we're going to be taking a closer look at the varieties of Bloodthirsters, the corn menagerie, so to speak. So getting started, Games Workshop had a big preview, and there was a lot to see. There was 30K, 40K, specialist games. But what we really care about is Age of Sigmar. Now, with everything that was announced, besides the, you know, the, of course, the expedited General's Handbook expectations, you know, there wasn't a lot of, say, model releases besides Warcry and other things, you know, especially with our, the new campaign coming up. John, you know, I'm sure you took a close look at some of the announcement that happened on Saturday. You know, since there weren't any on Sunday, at least not for AOS, what stood out to you is relatively significant.
Right, right. Well, I will say, whenever I see one of these, you know, GW Warhammer Fest or Black Library Day or any of these things, and of course they're almost always happening in England, and the rare occasion they happen in America, it seems like it's somewhere in the Midwest. I tell you, I'm a little jealous. That would be kind of on my bucket list to go attend one of these days. I know you and I, Alex, are big fans of the Black Library. So if I was to focus in on anything, one of those Black Library days would be pretty amazing. Can you imagine going to meeting like 5 or 10 of our favorite authors, hanging out, buying them a beer and all that good stuff. So yeah, that could be pretty amazing. Anyways, as far as this weekend's Warhammer Fest, yeah, like everybody, I was all over the internet, sneaking it out. Yeah, I'm taking my wife to the beach and popping out the phone and taking a little glimpse at the blog here. Some of the models that caught my eye, you know, some of the stuff for, I guess it's Warhammer Warcry. We got the snake dude, right? You look pretty cool. Some little gladiator dudes with the nets. For what it's worth, when I was a small child back in the 70s, I had these little gladiator, like plastic army men, but mine were gladiators with a guy with a trident and a net. So I'm looking at that guy right there. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, 10-year-old John is drooling to add that army into something somehow. There's a cool lion that I liked, all that stuff. But I think the stuff that we care about is we got a little preview of the General's Handbook 2019. Some new battle plans. In particular, I saw a couple new sort of, what do you call those, map layouts, if you will. I'm always a fan of different ways to set the game up, as long as it's not too one-sided or silly or difficult. And GW seems to kind of match all three of those criteria, yeah, and come out with some new stuff here and there. And the idea of tournament templates, I find that a little concerning, if I'm to be honest about that. Although on the one hand, there's the idea of some standardization that can, you know, where you go to different tournaments in different places, you kind of know what to expect when there's a template out there. On the flip side, then you get a little bit less variety perhaps in events, or yeah, events don't get attended if they are not, quote, template standard. So that can go both ways. It's yet to be seen what GW is going to do with that. So those are the kind of things that caught my eye, Alex. I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, you know, you mentioned a very good point about the organized play. You know, some of the announcements that they made about not only new battle plans, which was ironic because when they actually mentioned new battle plans, at least in the article on their live stream, they mentioned in a paragraph right below the images where, you know, there was an image that was a circle and it said new battle plans. But just above it, there is a text with a paragraph starting with, there won't be any new battle plans.
No, Alex, it said not just new battle plans.
Oh, you know what? I'm just a big old dummy.
Yeah, it says not just new battle plans. Yeah, no.
Okay, I got to reread that then. My bad.
Plus typos on the live stream, right? I mean,
yeah, we'll save face. We'll save face by saying maybe there was a typo. that being said, there's with Games Workshop making their own, you know, tournament packet, I'm curious because, you know, a lot of us, I think all three of us have been around, you know, we've been playing Games Workshop games competitively since Games Workshop originally was hosting and sponsoring their own events. And I think that it's great that they have the best of intentions to, you know, develop their own, say, tournament packs and tournament guidelines, but they aren't always the most competitive leaning, you know, a lot of their rules, a lot of their playtesters, a lot of particular playtesters are by no means what we would consider competitive players, you know, a lot of narrative driven ones. And that's why a lot of rules sometimes slip through the cracks that can be exploited. And it makes me curious. I'll say I'm mildly optimistic at the idea of them setting up their own packet, but I would not be surprised if the packet was looked at by most TOs that are seasoned and qualified, and they just continue to do what they do best.
I think a lot depends on how heavy that packet really is. If it's, you know, some loose frameworks and here's some ideas and here's a table of six things you might try. Here's a suggestion. Here's how sportsmen might work. You know, if it's kind of a high level rubric, then we could see a lot of it being incorporated. If it's a,
buttoned
down step by step. Yeah. I mean, so what do you think about Gary? You've seen what they've come up with before. So,
yeah.
So Gary, what do you think they're going to do?
As far as the high level stuff, they already have the Age of Sigmar tournament community packet that they've pushed pretty heavily in a lot of where they talk about just kind of high level, like, ooh, if you want to run an event, you should probably pay attention to sports scores and paint scores. And like, they don't really give you specifics on how to do those things, but they kind of like give you advice on how to handle different types of levels of play and stuff. So they have that Age of Sigmar tournament community pack already. So I'm really curious to see what tournament templates is like. That's what the phrase was called, tournament templates. And so, and this is in what they call the matched play section of the General's Handbook. So I'm really curious to see what happens. As Alex said, I'm very nervous about where this is going to go, because they have been criticized in the past for having very non-competitive based tournaments, but I think they might be hearing the community and maybe turning a new leaf. And so this, I'm very curious. I just want to see what happens. Honestly, I have no idea what's going to come of it. And yeah, that's how I see that going.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. You know, other than that, I think there's some pretty neat stuff. You know, depending on what games workshop subsystem, if you're into Blood Bowl, they had, you know, kind of cool stuff coming out. Ton of 40K, ton of Titanicus. I don't know about you guys, though. I still play 40K plenty. And even though I my true passion is Age of Sigmar, there's just more 40K players around and I got to roll my dice every week. But, you know, there's games like Titanicus that caught my eye. And again, not really for our game, but they showed some new Horus Heresy demons. Did you guys get a look at those three demons?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I got to say, when I think of a demon prince for 40K, I think of the actual, you know, model that Games Workshop makes, especially since there's so many power armor-like elements to it.
Right.
But I never thought that sculpt or that model really fit in AOS, so it always kind of irked me seeing the Demon Princes, the standard Demon Prince model in AOS. But those models, just the 30K ones that Forge World's going to make, just personifies like high fantasy demon, like greater or Demon Prince to me.
Oh yeah, everything I imagine in a Demon Prince is going on there, except wings. But there's some actually really nice third party wings out there. Whether you want to go with you know, more Nurgle, Khorne, whatever your slant is, there's wings for you, as it were. But yeah, just with the bone spurs coming out all over and the horns and the demonic face. Oh yeah, that's great.
My only curiosity is, you know, with those images, they didn't really tell us what the base size was. I assumed that those were 60 mil bases, but we really don't know how big they are, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I hope they're not the size of a bloodthirster. I also was picturing more demon print size, just because they only showed three, like you're gonna show three sculpts, that's got to be something worthy, right?
Well, what I work
the new Slaanesh demon prince Celeste an indication of the size of a demon prince. I would imagine that they're not gonna all of a sudden come out with a bloodthirster sized demon prince.
Well, what I worry is that they're actually on 50 mil bases and they're way tinier, and we all just had these, you know, assumptions that weren't true, because I think we all are in agreement that we're assuming like 60 mil base plus, but right. Like there's that small chance that it could be way tinier and just be in a pack of three.
Although seeing Celeste in person, Celeste is a lot bigger than the pictures make it look like. I was able to see it in person this weekend, and it is a demon prince, and so
yeah,
I don't think so. I guess that's significantly small.
Yeah, that'll be the big question. Are these guys, you know, Terminator sized or are they Dreadnought sized?
Yeah. Agreed.
Bloodthirster sized.
Yeah, so nothing gets Bloodthirster sized anymore. That's That is a big, beautiful model from GW, that's for sure.
We'll keep her secrets.
Yeah. You know, that's true. Garrett, you mentioned Shalaxy and how tall she is and how big she is. I'm sure you guys saw the conversion that someone had made where they had taken the Saigor model for Beasts of Chaos and they basically used the extra bits not used by Shalaxy because she has a very particular setup as a Keeper of Secrets, the named Keeper of Secrets. So they used basically the Saigor model and they added Keeper of Secrets bits to it, added some sculpting work to have a little bit more, you know, ribbons, you know, between piercings and the nose ring on the giant gore itself. And they basically made one of the old school versions of the original Keeper of Secrets, you know, those kind of bull-headed Keeper of Secrets, but up to scale, because it's actually that giant Beast of Chaos model, the Saigor, and then the other one, they are the exact same size as the Keeper of Secrets, or very close to.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
I actually have not seen that conversion. I'll have to hunt it down a little bit later. I'll spare the audience me getting distracted and looking for it right now.
I'll send it to you later. It's fun.
Nice. Speaking of stuff coming out of the Warhammer weekend, what about these new paints that they have? To me, they seem like they're going to be real similar to the new paint they came out for doing the Night Haunt real fast, but now an entire color range of them. Boy, I see a whole lot of units getting to the table real quick. What do you think? Or have you even seen those?
I definitely think that this is great. I mean, I've seen wild different opinions. Like people are like, oh, commission painters are going to hate this. Oh, commission painters are going to love this. Oh, like, you know what? But to me, like, I'm a dude who just like, I'm not an amazing painter, but I like to paint my own stuff. I don't get a commission painted. I feel like I do a decent job and I paint to play. I like the concept of this. I'm going to hold my judgment until I'm probably going to buy a couple when they come out and try them out and try to use them correctly to give them, you know, their real judgment of how they should be performing. But yeah, I'm kind of excited about these because if they can make me paint my armies a lot faster, then that'll get a really good look, a decent tabletop look, then I'm all for that. So yeah, if it does what it's supposed to do, then I'm all in.
Yeah, even certain things like flesh or hair, if it speeds that up, or leather, right?
Or just blood letters, if they have it for painting demon skin, if there's something like that, because blood letters to me are kind of boring to paint because they just have a lot of bland red skin and then some detail highlights, whatever. You know, armor. Skin is one that I would see it because skin's always annoying to paint. I just put a flesh tone and then put a wash on it. But if they can get a nice, cool skin tone going with the contrast real quick, like my Blood Reavers would just be a cinch. So
I'm very curious to see how they do with this because I haven't seen a lot of close up images of this. You know, there was that display that they had at Warhammer Weekend where they had a Primaris Marine and then they had it colored wholly in each one of the contrast colors. But I haven't been able to get a good look at that image where you can really zoom in and actually see the detail.
The issue I was seeing is a lot of the stuff that was on display that said painted with contrast, when you do look at it, it looks like they did contrast paint and then highlighted afterwards or dry brushed afterwards.
Well, the individual examples that I was going to refer to was the fact that I did see one that has, it was like a standard plug marine and each armor plate and its belly and its head and each leg was colored in a different contrast paint. Now I will say, if these contrast paints are anywhere similar to the two Night Haunt paints, I can see the misconception as to the fact that they might have had maybe a highlight on them. Because with these ones, it'll naturally make it look like there is a highlight, with the exception of doing a dry brush highlight over it. That is something that is that's going to be plain as day. I haven't been able to see examples that look like true highlights beyond that, but it's exciting to see that these paints do work out. And I don't think anyone, you know, if anyone's really going to try to be elitist about this and say that it's going to hurt the hobby, you know, you can take a hike, dude. I don't want to listen to you at all.
No, give me about washes when they came out.
Give me dips and stuff like this over gray plastic and primer, you know, seven days a week.
For sure. And this isn't, and if this is anything like the Night Haunt paints, then this is a no way anywhere close to a dip either. This is a great supplement to speed up the painting process for those who are also not either don't have time or are, you know, maybe have some focusing issues, or even individuals who just, you know, simply don't care about the high quality and they want to make it tabletop standard, which is
they still want to respect the other player, even if they're not into doing the painting themselves, right?
Completely, completely. Now, you know, with that, of course, we did also talk about the fact that General's Handbook is going to come with, you know, these new scenarios and, you know, the new rules for matched play and narrative play. And we know that things like, you know, the mercenary type company situation are going to come out. But thankfully, it looks as though all signs point to that being a narrative or story-driven rule only and not something...
Set your hopes on that, honestly.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, I would imagine that when they write rules, they write it for all three types of play.
You really think that they're going to be like, here's my Arcanaut company and my Legion army?
Yeah. I think it's going to, from what I saw from today's preview, it looks like it's just going to be Flesh Eater Corps and Fire Slayers are the only mercenaries.
Great. Okay. How about my 60 Grimghast Reapers and let's just add 30 Hearthguard Berserkers to that.
Yes.
Oh
yes,
man.
No. Well, I can see them popping out of a gnaw hole too. That should be awesome.
I mean, I'm going to hold my judgment until I read the rules. Cause we don't know what levels of restriction. We don't know you only can have 200 points of this. And so it's like, cool. You can not even have 10 Hearthguard Berserkers at 200 points.
I think it's a slippery slope. This type of thing is very slippery.
Interesting is I actually just finished the Gore Trek audiobook. Mm-hmm. And in there, they were talking about Fire Slayer mercenaries and how they're willing to work for chaos and work for whoever. It's very interesting that we're having this minor discussion when there was a book with the very same thing that came out less than a year ago.
I don't at all deny the narrative aspects of this. I mean, personally, I feel like if you wanted to have Fire Slayer mercenaries in narrative play, you didn't need a written rule to tell you that. You could have just narratively built the army yourself.
I don't know. You know how those narrative players are. They're stickier than historical players. So.
Oh yeah! Yikes!
Yeah. This is again one of those rules that I'm going to just wait until I read the actual rules before I flip my lid and say, "Oh, this is going to end the game competitively."
Yeah.
So, it's speculation is just going to cause, you know, just people yelling at each other. Like the rules are written, they're going to be published. Let's just see what happens.
Agreed. And you know, unfortunately, because of the fact that we have a lack of data, the amount of speculation we can really talk about at this point in time is going to be relatively low, especially with what type of points adjustments we may be looking at, what type of rules changes we might be looking at. I will say that when it comes to guesses and estimations, there are a few things that I feel very confident are and are not going to change. For some reason, there's a following out there of individuals that do think that there's going to be a complete upheaval in Realm artifacts. That's a completely different book. That's Malign Sorcery. I don't see that as really changing all that much.
And that's going to continue to evolve and grow for a while here. So,
I mean, you know, in their defense,
the door is just opened on those.
In their defense, the big FAQ comes 2 weeks after the General's Handbook, because the General's Handbook FAQ is the big FAQ.
Sure.
So the upheaval of how Realm artifacts work could be an entire Malign Sorcery errata that comes out in the big FAQ, which would be like a General's Handbook release.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you do to Malign Sorcery to really change it? It seems like a pretty functional system. There's some individual spells that are maybe on the strong side where you might either adjust their casting value or tweak the effects of the spell itself. But the overall system, I don't know, seems pretty solid. Have you had some trouble with that? Or do you think they're all ready to overhaul it?
I think it's people who complain. There's a very distinct group of individuals, you know, who are within the community who don't like certain combinations of certain artifacts, whether it's, you know, a vampire lord on zombie dragon with an ethereal amulet, or if it's, say, a cauldron of blood, hag queen on a cauldron of blood with the doppelganger cloak or something like that.
Oh, you know, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, if we start talking the artifacts, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think that that's necessarily going to change. With points adjustments, of course, that really depends. You know, a lot of people think, you know, of course, Daughters of Cain units might go up in points. Reapers are probably going to go up in points. Anything made in the last 6 months, it's probably not going to get touched.
Yep.
You know, you could probably see a lot of points reductions to destruction armies. I get the feeling.
Older stuff going by the wayside as usual.
Do you think so? That's actually a great question. John, do you think that certain armies, certain units that still have playable war scrolls, like, you know, Tomb Kings, for example, or maybe even something as popular as semi-popular as Darkling Covens, do you think that those might just be eliminated in terms of points, just a big zero on their points cost, throwing them back into the realm of narrative play?
Yeah, that's what I tend to think is going to happen is that they're going to take stuff that they're not manufacturing anymore, stuff with very old molds, and they're just going to squat it. It's going to go away. They've been pushing it closer and closer to the edge. You know, it's like a one toe in the pond, keeping them still around.
Two Kings are no longer in the Modern General's Handbook. They have a compendium book that has their points, and that book is not going to be changed. So Tomb Kings are basically what their points are right now are what they will be forever. And you can use them. They're never going away, but they're never going to be supported anymore.
And there will still be plenty of events that don't allow compendium.
Well, none have yet to ban it.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's going to be up to the events, I think, because the Tomb Kings, it's the Tomb Kings compendium book with all of the updated war scrolls to their final form and the war scroll points, they FAQ'd saying that, yes, compendium is allowed in the current General's, no matter what, General's Handbook comes out. This is the book this is your final book. They're not going to be in any future General's Handbook. They're not going to change them at all. That's up to events to ban compendium, and I have yet to go to a single event that has banned compendium.
Yeah, and I myself have not even considered it. I have players that don't end up bringing any Tomb Kings, but I get asked about it. So I just always say, yeah, sure, of course you could bring those. If it's going to bring you out, please bring it, right?
The High Elf Bolt Thrower is one that is used regularly that's in a compendium book. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. When it comes to, you know, the overall changes, though, you know, I don't think that they're going to be, you know, all too significant, especially since I think that last year, not only was there the General's Handbook, but there was also the 2.0 change. And I think that that might have been a relatively big shift as well. But, you know, I think time will tell, of course. It may be just a little too soon for us to make too many assumptions, but I think that we have a good idea, a good base of what might be coming out now.
Assumptions we can make are any books that were written this year in 2019 are not going to change in the General's Handbook. So Flesh Eater Courts, their points aren't changing. Skaven, points aren't changing.
Slaanesh,
points aren't changing. Nothing in the that came out this year, because the General's Handbook went to the printers before these books were released to the public. So
yeah, it
was
likely
already finalized, sent to the editors, sent to the translators. It's done. Like, it's set in stone before we got these books. And so they didn't change the points of those books in this book, since they didn't need to in there.
And they've been very transparent and consistent about that as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one thing that we will know, is that all of the books, which happen to be the ones that are shaking up the meta and causing a lot of problems right now, are not going to be changed at all in the new General's Handbook. So there's that.
Problems are relative, you know, and they just came out with a battle tome that might just sell an army that you don't see a whole lot of. And so if it sells their models, problematic is relative.
Well, I'm speaking purely from the community standpoint then, not the company standpoint.
Fair enough.
Well, you know, one of those armies that is not necessarily going to get any change at all, at least in terms of points, is Korn. You know, the Korn mm-hmm. book came out just about a month and a half ago, 2 months. I could be wrong. But, you know, one of the big takeaways from that army was not just, of course, the adjustments and improvements to some of the heroes, the infantry, the judgments of Korn. But, you know, we also got some updates to the Bloodthirsters as well. And the great thing is the Bloodthirsters have three, maybe even four different flavors if you count the not just the store-bought, but the premium brand as well. And, you know, there are three standard Bloodthirsters, and of course there is good old No Wings.
Scarbrand.
Yep. And you know, for our unit spotlight, we decided that we may want to talk about these, you know, these four units with the audience today. So, you know, when we do take a look at our Bloodthirsters, they are very, you know, there's a lot of variety there. John, which one do you think stands out to you the most? If you were to start a Korn army, which I know you have, or at least Donna has, what would be your first go-to Bloodthirster to add to a list?
Right. So, yeah, of course, I say I have a large Korn demon army. I do not have a large Korn demon army. My wife has a large Korn demon army that I built and she painted. And I have been allowed to use with much threats and warnings once or twice. And it's a fun little army. And you should know that I had to shut off the mic for a minute right before we started this segment. I think she anticipated that we were going to talk some Korn. And so my wife came in, saw that I had cracked open the bottle of the coconut wine and asked that I pour her a little shot glass that I have here of that as well. In fact, that was the Las Vegas Open 2016 shot glass. Let's just say she discovered the hard way that wine is a euphemism as applied to this particular beverage. She took about three sips and the rest ended up back into my glass, which is going along quite nicely.
Okay.
So wow. That to the side, I particularly like the Bloodthirster of Insensate Rage. I've actually ran all three of the standard ones, Unfettered Fury and Wrath of Korn. Never ran Scarbrand before. But the Bloodthirster of Insensate Rage, you know, like all Bloodthirsters, he has 14 wounds, starts off with a 10-inch move, 4-plus save, 10-up bravery. This particular guy... Now, he doesn't have really a ranged weapon per se. He does have a 2-inch range on his Great Axe of Korn. It starts out with 5 attacks, 4 to hit, 2 to wound, -2 to rend, D6 damage. And the only thing that goes down as he takes damage is the number of attacks, not the 2 hit, and certainly not that 2+ to wound. And the big thing that I like about him and the reason that people always like to take him, excuse me, is this outrageous carnage. And basically, if an unmodified wound roll for an attack by this model is a 6, each enemy within 8 inches of the model suffers the number of mortal wounds shown on the damage table in addition to any normal damage. And they actually did tone this down a little bit from the previous edition, but it still causes 4 mortal wounds. Wow. 4 mortal wounds to every unit within 8 inches. That is
per 6 you roll.
Yeah. 6 you roll, no less. And since you're getting, you know, typically 5 attacks, and maybe you throw something like the Hellfire Blade on there, or even the Harvester of Skulls to get +1 attack, you're getting at least 1, maybe 2 sixes every turn. Maybe we're getting some reroll ones in there as well. So pretty gnarly. And plus, this guy has a great command ability. You get until the end of your phase, you can reroll charge rolls for any Korn demons within 16 inches of this guy. And remember, my wife is running, and therefore when I get to play Korn, I am running an all demon army. So that means everybody gets to reroll the charge. So, to me, this guy is pretty baller. You can reroll rolls of 1 for attacks made by this model if it made its charge. So there's your rerolls going in. And he's pretty awesome. Now, Garrett, you and I have talked a little bit about these Bloodthirsters. And while you do like this guy, he is not necessarily your first pick if you're only going to put 1 Bloodthirster in the army. What are your thoughts on this, my friend?
Well, I've just recently purchased 2 more Bloodthirsters.
Wait, 2 more? Are you getting to be like James here? You got to catch them all. Whereas he has all the vermin lords, you have all the bloodthirsters.
Well, I only owned a bloodthirster of Insensate Rage before the new book dropped.
Oh, okay. Does Sarah know you bought more bloodthirsters?
Yeah, she does. Okay. I now have the other two bloodthirsters because in my list I am running all the bloodthirsters except for the bloodthirster of Insensate Rage.
What?
Which I now, yeah. So while the Insensate Rage Thirster got insanely better than he was, he went from base 4 attacks to base 5 attacks, base 3 mortal wounds to base 4 mortal wounds. Like, he just got way better. I think that probably the most important bloodthirster of them all, which he gets better the more bloodthirsters and demons you run, is the bloodthirster of Unfettered Fury, because his command ability is insane in this War of Activations, the Great Activation War of 2019. So I'll quickly go over. So he has the same stats, 14 wounds, 4 up save, starts at a 10-inch move. His weapon profiles, he actually gets a nice little ranged weapon. It's a 12-inch range, 3s to hit, 3s to wound, rend 1, D3 damage, and then degrading number of attacks starting with 4. So he's 4 attacks, 3s and 3s, rend 1, D3. And the Bloodthirsters in general all got a massive buff in the new Battle Tome where they all inherently reroll 1s to hit, and that's not just in melee. So his shooting attack also rerolls 1s to hit, which is really nice. So, and then his axe, which the Wrath of Khorne has the exact same axe as him, is 6 attacks, 3s, 2 plus to wound, which degrades, rend 2, D3 damage. So I run him with Hew the Foe command trait from Gortide, so he's at D3 plus 1 damage. So he actually does quite a bit of damage. Now, his command ability is all Khorne demons wholly within 16 inches can choose to be piled in from 6 inches away and get 6 inches and add 3 inches to the distance that they pile in, which is how you deal with this Great Activation War of 2019. Because with everybody striking first in the start of the combat phase, you can just shut down that ability by saying, I'm not within 3 inches of you. You don't get to be picked to fight. And then you pile in from 6 inches away. So you're essentially striking first and you get to dictate the order of activations, because you can have multiple bloodthirsters. All one command point can pop it on all of your bloodthirsters, so you just be like, well, this one will pile in and then you'll attack me and then this one will pile in, and so you kind of can really control the board. So
right, because a swing first mechanic is not an interrupt mechanic, and once correct. You activate to pile in, you continue to swing from that moment. That's brilliant.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, the swing first mechanics are strike at the start of the combat phase. So if you're over 3 inches away, you're 4 and 5 inches away, even 6, you go, okay, start of the combat phase. Are you within 3? Or you can even have like a chaff unit be within 3 inches. So they have to kill the chaff unit at the start of the combat phase. And then you can freely pile in with your bloodthirster with no recourse of what's going to happen to you. So yeah, it is almost, I would say, a requirement in a Khorne army, because otherwise you're kind of just throwing your units to die to these strike first people and you have no way of dealing with them.
Now, do they actually lose their activation? So they, quote, go first, nothing happens, you pile in from 6 inches away, then they don't get to activate at that point?
No, they FAQ'd it that they still would get their activation.
Okay.
Yeah, which is useful. I mean, that screams, you know, exactly what the Sisters of Slaughter do. You know, this last weekend, I myself was on the tail end of fighting Jeremy Fessier's 60 Sisters of Slaughter list for Daughters of Cain. And let me tell you, having those ladies be like 5-4 inches away and totally forgetting that they'll be able to swing in on me was just a nightmare. So having this bloodthirster do something very similar is, it's not as abusive, but it's something to take note of. And if your opponent forgets about it, it's a huge boon to you.
But also greatly increases your threat range, because now you can quote unquote run and charge, because you can just run with your bloodthirster, go 16 inches down the field, and then you're like, well, I can't charge because I ran, but I'm within 6 inches of you, so I'm just going to pile in.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so the 6-inch pile in is an amazing mechanic, and so the fact that it's one command point will target all Khorne demon units wholly within 16 inches. You can make bloodletters pile in from 6 inches away, blood crushers, whatever you need.
Oh, just, yeah, your heralds, all those, because there's plenty of demons to send in there.
So he's
Karanak.
Yeah, math yeah. preferred multiplier. He also gets some nifty abilities that I honestly should remember to use at the end of your the start of your opponent's movement phase. A unit within 3 inches of him, he can decide that they can't retreat. And then at the start of your hero phase, roll a die for every unit within 8 inches. On a 5+, they take a 1 mortal wound. So,
oh yeah, that's pretty nice.
Well, Alex, talk to me about your thoughts on the last, or well, not the last Bloodthirster, but the final of the three generic Bloodthirsters, the Wrath of Khorne.
Okay, well, you know, when I take a look at armies that I don't play, and you know, you ask an individual, you ask me to, you know, see how my thoughts on them. It really depends. Like, I try to think about how this unit played well would affect me in a negative way, you know. So Bloodthirster of Unfettered Fury, as John mentioned, you know, it gets a little nuts with its outrageous slaughter rule with the 4 mortal wounds for every 6 to wound at its top bracket for everyone within 8 inches. So if I'm dumb enough to keep a character nearby and he's just I will lose at least one character if you roll 2 sixes. Most people will lose one character if you know, the Khorne player rolls 2 sixes of wound and they're within 8 inches at least. What's up?
I do want to say this weekend at the tournament, a guy was running 2 of them and he charged against a Kerrigan Overlord guy top of turn 1. And the Kerrigan Overlord didn't know about the ability. So he had his whole army punched up. He rolled 3 sixes, did 12 mortal wounds. His whole army killed basically his entire army. It was a 20 minute game. He just like, I can see.
That's rough stuff. That, yeah. Hey, you know what? That's a mistake you make once.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Just wanted to say that.
When I take a look at the Wrath of Khorne Bloodthirster, which is the last of the normal unnamed Bloodthirsters, you know, I of course there's going to be, you know, the rules look great, but I don't see it standing out as too competitive. You know, he does have the same Mighty Axe of Khorne, as Garrett mentioned earlier, that is going to be on the Bloodthirster of Unfettered Fury. So that's fine and dandy. It also does have a ranged weapon that's two different missile weapons, one of which is the Hellfire Breath, which is essentially picking an enemy unit within 8 inches of the model, and on a 2+, they take D3 mortal wounds, so that could be helpful. You know, you're adding more mortal wounds to the mix. He also has the Blood Flail, which is a 12-inch range ranged weapon that is also just one attack. You know, hits and wounds on 3s. It's 1 rend, which is a little disappointing, but it's the damage degrades, but it starts at 6. So that can get a little nutso if your opponent hasn't degraded this Bloodthirster yet, but it's still only 1 attack. You know, combining that with the D3 mortal wounds can definitely be rough stuff, though. You know, he has the ability to reroll hits for attacks if he targets either a hero or a monster. So that can be pretty helpful, though, with his Blood Flail, you know, to make sure, you know, I want to do 6 wounds on this or that, especially if it's a character that, you know, is, you know, less than 10 wounds. It might have a -1 to hit, but at least you're rerolling failed hits.
Fire Slayers.
Yeah, or fire. Yeah, being able to get up close to the Fire Slayers and be like, I want that guy gone, you know, would be very helpful.
It's nice, you know, when it hits.
It, yeah. I mean, it hits on a 3, but, and being able to re-roll that 3 or potentially a 4, can be helpful. You know, he also has the Rune Crown of Khorne, which basically lets him unbind as a wizard, and, you can add 2 to his unbinding rolls, which is fun. You know,
that's why Donna loves this guy. She loves shutting down the magic phase with that.
Yeah. And it can unbind, endless spells. So, yeah, that's super helpful, especially since that can be just at the start of your hero phase. You know, his command ability is, you know, at the start of the combat phase, essentially he can pick 1 friendly Khorne demon unit wholly within 16 of the model with this ability, and he can give them reroll hit rolls for attacks made by them, which is good. You know, it's something that's not super unique among, you know, other characters, but you know, it's another, you know, point of generation for that command ability. So, you know, it's helpful. I think this one's a lot more ranged based than close combat based, especially since all it has is really the Mighty Axe of Khorne again, as we mentioned. Well, you know, overall, I'm kind of, he is a lot more of a support character. Overall, if you were to bring two Bloodthirsters, maybe make this one the second one if you have the Bloodthirster of Unfettered Fury. Otherwise, if you really have just one Bloodthirster on the table, I am just not too stoked about this guy. You know, really, again, Unfettered Fury is okay, but then Insensate Rage is I think my favorite overall.
Yeah, I would agree with those sentiments a lot. The one thing is he is the Wrath of Khorne is a very solid support unit. The +2 to unbind can be crucial as a Khorne player, because that critical the cogs, you're like, oh, cogs go off and I get +1 to casting. It's like, well, I get +2 to deny, so I'm gonna have a good chance of denying it. So he's really good at that. The 6 damage swing is great for sniping characters. I particularly added him to my list over a Bloodthirster of Insensate Rage because of Fire Slayers, because I'm like looking at him like, I need to kill all the heroes to stop the 4+ shrug. So having the two ranged Bloodthirsters, the Unfettered Fury and him, and he rerolls all hit rolls, so even successful. Yeah. So at the -1, he's 4 up rerolling. I've done a bunch of
tests. Well, he is also the most expensive one, too, so you're paying premium points for all that.
Well, a whole 20 to 40 points more.
Yeah, 20 to 40 points. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they all kind of went up in price.
Yeah.
Garrett, you play Khorne more than any of us. I mean, I don't play Khorne at all, and then John will on occasion. You are the Khorne guy. So, you know, we've been talking about the three generic, let's say, store-bought Bloodthirsters. What about Scarbrand? Have you played with Scarbrand before?
I have not. I feel like he runs into the problem of he'll just get shot off the table before he does anything. I don't know.
He's slow.
He's just too slow.
He's barely slow. He's literally 2 inches slower without fly.
I know.
He's a big old glop on the table.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's like trying to move a duo around.
He got better.
Good point.
He got better now that if he doesn't fight for a turn on a 1+, he does 8 mortal wounds. So he basically just goes into combat, does 8 mortal wounds. And then Slaughter does a bunch of damage as well. But I don't know. He's 400 points. So he's 80 points more than the most expensive Bloodthirster. He's slower. He doesn't have fly. I've heard people have success with him, but he's 400 points.
Yeah, 400 points. Him, or maybe we have two of the smallest Bloodthirsters.
Like, that's 20 Blood Warriors for the same point.
That's very fair. 20 Blood Warriors I would have over Scarbrand any day.
So, but as far as I'm actually taking all three Bloodthirsters because my Bloodthirster of Insensate Rage, I summon him like almost 2 out of 3 games. I've noticed that I end up with 8 blood tithe points by turn 3, and I'm like, you know, it'd be great, another Bloodthirster. And the Bloodthirster of Insensate Rage, honestly, he does the most damage on average if you don't provide any buffs. The Blade of Symmetry for +1 damage and the Hue of the Foe command trait for +1 damage on the other two guys, making them D3 +1 damage, makes them do a significant amount of damage. But without that, their damage is just kind of unreliable. While his is being able to get like 3d6 damage through, you'll quickly do 14 damage or whatever. And then you have the exploding heads. So he's the most swingy when it comes to damage, but he's honestly just, if all you want is damage, just go with him. And so I always bring a third Bloodthirster of Insensate Rage to all my events now, because I'm going to summon a Bloodthirster.
Oh, that's a great call.
But I do bring the Unfettered Fury and the Wrath of Khorne, because the Wrath of Khorne provides great support with his unbinding. Mm-hmm. And he brings more ranged potential to snipe out heroes, which is something that I lack right now. And then honestly, his Mortal Wound Breath was super useful when I was fighting Seraphon, because I was just like, oh, Eternal Guard with a 2+ save, 3 of them die. And so
Nice. Hey, and let's face it, all three of them are absolutely amazing looking models. Like, no matter one you take, fun to build, fun to paint, look awesome, pull the kids in from across the room. It's great.
Yeah, no, they're great, and they were. I think you know they were the first Bloodthirsters to, or first Greater Demons to get a new kit. You know, and I think Lords of Change came in right behind them. So you know they were a new, relatively new sculpt in this AOS era, or no, they were
pre-AOS.
They were an End Times mm-hmm. model. Yeah, I think that they're great. I'm a little conflicted as to which ones I would bring if I was playing against or playing them. I know which ones I would prefer my opponents to use if they were playing against me.
You want to see Scarbrand all day long.
Oh yeah. But you know, this is good. You know, we're going to see a lot more Korn players, and you know, I did play against Korn at Riptide GT. They didn't have a Bloodthirster, but they had a lot of support characters. I think that the game may have been a completely different end result if someone, you know, if you did have, you know, the say Insensate Rage Bloodthirster overall, or maybe two of them, or maybe someone else, just not Scarbrand. we are starting to hit the tail end of the episode.
Want to say one more strategy with Bloodthirsters, especially the two shooting ones. If you mm-hmm. give them Killing Frenzy, which is plus one to hit, Killing Frenzy does not specify melee attacks, and so you do mm-hmm. get plus one to hit with your shooting attacks.
Yeah, that's so fun.
Just wanted nice. To give that last little Bloodthirster tactic out there for all of you budding Korn players.
My best advice is give a little coconut wine to your opponent at the beginning of the match, guaranteed to give you the unfair advantage, I assure you.
Yeah. Now, you know, we're getting into tournament season, you guys.
I'm in it. I got two GPs in 4 weeks.
Garrett, well, yeah, you are going to be running these, or not running these events, but going to these events. Do you have any that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, Crimson GT is sold out. So tough luck getting a ticket there. You could jump on the wait list. It is at Huzzah Hobbies up in Loudoun, Virginia. But mm-hmm. Triumph GT in New Jersey, I believe it's North Jersey, hosted by Mythicos Game Studios. They're a game store up there. That one, I believe, still has plenty of space. And that one is June 8th and 9th. I believe the whole Triumph GT weekend, which has all sorts of other events, is the 7th through the 9th. But that one hopefully will be upwards of 50 to 60 players, and it'll be a great event. So
great. And John, do you have any events that you want to promo?
Well, I have lots of events I want to promo, but I think right now we're going to focus on the BAO that is coming up. Well, first off, Kublai Khan is going to be May 23rd through 26th, just a mere 2 weeks away. I want to bring attention to the Friday night doubles tournament that is May 24th. Not a lot of people signed up for that right now, so if you're on the fence, go ahead and come on out. It's going to be a small crowd, but we're going to have lots of fun. I predict easy points for Alex if no one comes and takes them from him, so that should be fun.
Uh-oh.
Yep. And other than that, we got the singles championship Saturday and Sunday, the 25th and 26th. We do have enough players for it to be an official GT. Other than that, we just want more bodies is more fun, so hopefully, if you're on the fence, go ahead and get that ticket and come on out, because it is going to be a good time. And what else is going on? I know you got some stuff coming up that you want to tell us about, Alex.
Well, I actually want to add something to yours. I tried buying my ticket because I am a procrastinator at heart. I tried to buy my ticket this weekend. Turns out it looks as though pre-registration is closed for the Kublai Khan AOS, 40K, and other events. So it looks like the ticket sales are all going to be in person. So if you guys plan on going, don't get discouraged that you might not be able to buy the ticket online. I'm sure they'll have plenty of space to
unlimited space. We literally have unlimited space at this event. So yeah, if that, I'm surprised to hear that pre-reg is closed as well, but I know Kublai Khan does it that way, so not surprised that the 40K and AOS events are doing the same thing. But yeah, come on down, get your Kublai Khan ticket. We will make space for you. There will be space for you. Come play. It will be fun. Much fun. Maybe the remainder of the coconut wine is what joins me on fun. That fun. We'll see how fun that is.
Perfect. So yeah, for those of you guys who are out of towners, don't be discouraged if you can't get your tickets online. I'm going to be flying 700 miles to get down there. And I know I'm very confident that I'll be able to get my ticket. In fact, there's going to be room that will be made for you. So
I mean, worst case, KubeCon is awesome. So you're going to a really cool con.
There's no worst case. You'll make it in the tournament. No worst case needed. But
worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, you have too much of John's coconut wine.
That's right. Worst case scenario. That might be the worst case scenario.
Thank you again for listening tonight at the for the Age of Sigmar podcast. This is Alex, John, and Garrett. You guys have a great night.
Later.
Good night.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.